Hello, friends. Welcome to the Brave Writer Podcast. I'm Julie Bogart, mom to five adult kids who live all over the planet, and I'm a homeschool veteran. What do I hope you'll get out of these podcasts? Well, besides a chance to fold the laundry or take that long walk you've been craving, I hope you'll pause and think a little more intentionally about educating, parenting, and adulting. This podcast is dedicated to giving you ideas to consider, but it's also interested in the questions that you ask. So if you want to offer a topic for further consideration, reach out to me through social media. You can find me on Instagram at Julie Brave Writer, or you can tweet me at Brave Writer. Now let's get started with today's topic offered by one of you. And this topic is near and dear to many of us. Here's the gist of what this mom, who will remain anonymous, wrote to me. What if you just don't have the energy to do all the stuff? You know, that magic making, planning, execution of all the tasks. This mom went on to tell me that she knows what needs to get done, but she can't bring herself to do it. She's just feeling defeated and restless and ineffective. Does that resonate with any of you? I certainly get it. I've had seasons of my life like that. There are seasons in all of our lives that make the ordinary tasks feel like you're bench pressing a truck. And when you're in a season like that, I don't know about you, but I just can't ever imagine getting out of it. There was a time when I was pregnant with Johanna when I had acute bronchitis and my oldest child was 2 years old. I could not keep up with him. That's how sick I was. And I remember laying in bed, watching him running around the apartment, knowing that I would never be able to carry a laundry basket again. Like, that's how I felt. I felt so tired, so sick, so ineffective. I couldn't imagine that I would be on the other side someday. All of us get to those points. And of course, life and experience help us to know that even when some of those seem dire and irreversible, like becoming paralyzed or losing some of our body functions and needing to depend on machines to supply us with what we need, even when we get to those dire moments, there are tools that can help us to cope and to move to the other side or to learn to live with the challenge in a new way. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So let's start off by identifying a few of the reasons that we lose heart or energy for the tasks of homeschooling and parenting, shall we? I've got four of them. So we'll start with the first one, which is what I call the babyhood stage of life. The babyhood stage. You know, when you're growing a family, you do it usually a child at a time. Now, some of you are rock stars and you've had twins or triplets, maybe even quadruplets or quintuplets. But most of the time, you're getting a baby at a time, maybe every 2 or 3 years. And if you are one of those mothers of multiples, then this applies to you on steroids, by the way. But anyway, there's usually a point when you hit what I would call the breaking point of parenting in those early years. For me, it happened with my fourth child. Sometimes it happens with your second or third, or maybe it's with your eighth or ninth if you're one of those mega families with 13 kids. But there's a point where you discover, wow, I really cannot do it all. This baby is taking it out of me, or the cumulative effect of baby after baby after baby has leveled me. Do you know what I'm talking about? Sometimes it's because you hit that magic number, like 6 kids. Sometimes it's because of a multiple, but sometimes this happens to you with a surprise pregnancy. So your youngest is 10 years old. You think you're out of the baby and little child stage and suddenly you're pregnant and you just weren't ready to be pregnant at 42. Or maybe you are one of those kind, dear souls who sees the need out there for children who don't have good parents, and you enter the foster care system. And suddenly, you're bringing in someone's child who has really severe needs. and it's taking it out of you. What do we do in that circumstance when you are suddenly back knee-deep in laundry and middle-of-the-night feedings? The babyhood stage of life eventually wins in the chess game of energy. Combine sleep deprivation with round-the-clock baby care, and your life points will just evaporate, just like in a computer game. You just see them going down. Now, the good news is that this stage is usually just a solid year, you know, give or take 6 months of bedwetting or, you know, a baby who won't wean. But usually that really heavy-duty sleep deprivation happens in those first 12 months of life. So let's get some perspective to start with. We're only talking about a season that is 12 to 18 months. Part of what's going on is that you are in an extended period of using your creativity and your available energy to troubleshoot the unspoken needs of a very small new human being. And we don't get awards for that. You know, the fact that you can tell when the baby needs to be burped or when the baby's about to, you know, soil a diaper or when the baby needs to eat, no one's handing out brownie points for that. Your vigilance and kindness and quick wits are being siphoned off to this newest person's needs, which are not academic in the least. You are not teaching them to do fractions while you're changing a diaper. You'd get credit for teaching a child to read. We don't typically get credit because we are effectively changing a diaper or know when that child is ready to burp, right? Meanwhile, while you're attending to this tiny little human, your other kids are growing up and they require a different kind of skill from you. These might even be new skills to stimulate them, to teach them, to civilize them so they have good etiquette, they know how to make friends, they know how to sustain them. These are demands on you as well, and they are requiring a kind of thoughtfulness that your instincts and your intuition are not as equipped to handle, the same way as baby care. So sometimes you offer these new skills, the teaching, the nurturing, the stimulating, with alacrity. And sometimes because of that, you stumble on that magic day when everything comes together and goes really well. That's when you imagine you've arrived in this new reality of reciprocal energy. Here you are offering something to your kids and you're getting something that energizes you back. So you teach the phonics, they suddenly read, now they can read to themselves. You teach them to count, now they can count. And when you ask them to set the table, they get 7 forks, 1 for every person. This is minor miracle stuff if you are living it in the day to day. Unfortunately, and alas, this never lasts because you are a parent and parenting is harder with a baby in tow, even though it's wonderful. So, while you will have those magical moments, the day-to-day during that first year to year and a half of life with a new baby is not always filled with that kind of output reward that helps you regroup and resupply yourself with the energy you need to parent and educate. So to help yourself in this babyhood stage of life, I've come up with a couple principles that I think might give you a little peace of mind. Your kids can grow leaps and bounds without a lot of extra effort on your part. And that should be good news. The goal isn't to turn every day into a Pinterest-worthy tea party. These are the years when you take the extra nap. These are the years you use the television if you need to. You can provide lots of interesting resources and you can teach from the daily naturalness of your life. In other words, I wouldn't see this season as the time to embark on the 6 family gold rush party for 4th grade California history. It's probably not the time to tackle a brand new to you box curriculum. It's probably not the time to feel guilty that your 2nd grader never learned the Pledge of Allegiance. during this year, you are not quite in survival mode. You are rather in what I'm calling crockpot mode. This is the slow cooking method of learning. You're going to toss some ingredients into the home, into the life that you lead together, and you're going to turn the simmer down to low, and then you're going to let the learning cook over time. What does that look like? Sometimes it's going to seem like nothing is happening, right? It'll just feel like status quo, status quo, status quo. Yeah, we read books aloud from the library. Yeah, we ate breakfast. Yeah, I helped one person tie their shoes. But you can't see a lot of that meaningful academic progress because you're in the simmer. But here's what I want to offer you. You can trust what the rest of us older than you have already found out. That there is time. There's an abundance of it. You can go slow to go fast in this season. I remember when Caitrim was born, for instance, she was my fifth child, and I finally realized that I was supposed to stay in bed postpartum. I was 34 years old, and I was exhausted from four kids and a pregnancy, and one of those kids was a bedwetter. And one of those kids breastfed almost up to the time that she was born. So I was already pretty tired. Now I had a newborn and I realized I could homeschool from the king size bed. So that's what we did. We read books. I breastfed the baby. When John would come home at night, we would watch movies in the master bedroom. And we got on this like old movie World War II kick. And do you know what that did? It led us into learning about World War II, not because it was on anybody's schedule, but because it had become a coping mechanism for my postpartum recovery. So as you're in this season, focus on one thing a day rather than all the things. We allowed the theme of World War II to last for months. Noah built a website with his dad that focused on tanks. I had children tracing weapons. We read Number the Stars by Lois Lowry. My children played games like dress-up clothes where they were orphans from the war. And one of them acted as the Red Cross nurse. Like literally, it was this weird season where there was a lot of play and reading and video watching and lounging that accommodated that babyhood stage of life. As you rotate through these various experiences that you share with your kids, maybe from the king size bed, maybe from the couch downstairs, what you're going to discover is that they're fine. They're not neglected. They are recognizing that this is a stage of life for them as well. And that baby is having to be integrated to an existing family. And you are helping them do that by recognizing that the baby changes the way you all do life. That is the meta lesson they're getting, and it's a really valuable one. Now, remember, this is a short season, maybe 12 to 18 months, and beating yourself up for not doing more doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help the baby, it doesn't help your kids, and it definitely doesn't help you. So I want to recommend that you go, you know, to your local CVS store or Kroger or wherever, Michaels, and get a great big poster board. And I want you to write the word no on it with an exclamation point. And every time someone asks you to host a dinner, to babysit their children for a year, you get to just pick up the sign and hold it up and say no. Because during this season, doing less is the way that you regain your energy for the more later. Okay, so let's move on now to the number two reason that you might be feeling low energy in homeschool. A lot of people call it homeschool burnout. Now, being burnt out is such a familiar comment that I think we don't fully appreciate what it is anymore. I know what it looks like in my home. Burnout feels like boredom. The pencils are broken. The books all seem really dull. I find that I don't care Like my mind will be wandering while I'm teaching the math lesson to something more interesting, like a political news story or a conversation I was having online with one of my friends. That's how you know you're right on that edge of burnout. You wish your kids would take more initiative to provide themselves that college-ready education. And you wish that you didn't have to spend your free time doing research or finding that resource or tracking down that form that will help them get what they need. Burnout, then, in the homeschool may be the wrong term. I think it's more like you're browning out, or perhaps you are simply low on those essential life points. To get more energy for the stuff that no longer holds your interest, you have to make this counterintuitive move. Instead of obsessing on what doesn't interest you, you need to go get some energy from a place you already love or something new that you find fascinating. The energy that's not available to you, it's stimulation. Like imagine yourself as a power grid and we're running out of coal. Well, can we plug you into a wind farm? Do you see what I'm saying? You're needing a new source of energy. It's not just going back to the old sources that are gone and trying to manually drive this engine. I'm looking outside right now at my house. It's like the difference between mowing your lawn with an electric lawnmower versus one that you use gasoline. Those two have a similar vibe. They just have different energy sources. But what if you went back to the push mower that has no outside additional energy? That's what it's like to keep doing the same old thing without a fresh energy source. So where are you going to get this from? Do you need to take time off? Do you need Epsom salt baths? You know, this whole self-care piece. Now, you might, and those are wonderful. I highly recommend both. But that doesn't necessarily help you teach your kids more. It just helps you feel less bad about your low energy. And it might refresh you a little bit. Here's the thing. The key to recovery from the blahs is stimulation, allowing your imagination to be captivated again. I was sharing earlier today with a mom, and we were talking about the fact that a lot of times our kids have a failure of imagination. And we have been told that the way out of that failure is to let them be bored and eventually they'll think of something. Well, that might be true, but you know what's even more true? Somebody else giving you an idea. The parent bringing out a new supply or offering to play with the child or suggesting a new use for something that they've never thought of before. Partnership. Stimulation from an outside source helps you recover energy. And when you are a homeschool parent, you are being drained of your creativity constantly. You are helping your kids. You are thinking about what you can do to make life good for them. Here's what I want to offer you. You need someone to do that for you. So if the homeschool tasks feel like drudgery, good news. You're minutes away from figuring it out because what you need is a little fun, a change of scene, a surprise, a co-conspirator in some new arena. Now, I know that perhaps I'm about to read your mind. Are you worried that you aren't going to tackle the responsibilities if you simply start pursuing something that feels stimulating to you? Like maybe you've always thought, oh, I want to be a quilter. And then you think, no, I can't be a quilter because I'll only want to do that. And then we'll never get anything done in homeschool. Is that what you're thinking? Okay, well, here's what I know. We don't find the energy for what we ought to do if that is all we do. I'm going to say that again because I think it's a good thing to write down, okay? So if you're keeping a scatter book or a bullet journal or something, try this. We don't find energy for what we ought to do if that is all we do. That's why keeping your home fires burning inside is so important to all those less attractive options. It's in pursuing what interests you that you may find one of the following results. So let me give you an example. First, you may find a way to combine what you love with your children's education. I did that again and again. When I got bored with their education, I got interested in something educational. So I studied art. I cultivated a nature journaling practice. We watched documentaries about social justice issues. We studied history that was interesting to me. In fact, we skipped history that I didn't care about. Why? Because who can master all of history? There's a ton of history available to study. And the goal isn't to master all the subjects of history. It's to know how to think like a historian. I could impart that more easily if we were focused on aspects of history that were interesting to me. I also noticed that I did better if the books I was reading aloud were ones that delighted me. I have a famous thing that I've said for years that I could be rearranging my spice cabinet while I was reading Redwall aloud. For some reason, as delightful as Redwall is, stab me in the eye. I can read one Redwall book aloud. The rest all had to be read by my children. There had to be something in it for me to keep me going. So if that's you, guilt-free, read books aloud that you also find enjoyable to read. By allowing myself to study and read about what interested me, I also found new relevance for the studies that I was offering the kids. So that meant I could read something, I could watch a documentary, and then we'd have a big juicy conversation about that, which might be a way back in to the subjects that I was trying to teach them. Secondly, you might discover resources and experiences that you can use for your kids. So I remember just being one of those people who was interested in quilting and sewing when my kids were young. By the time Katrin was ready to do that, I knew enough about sewing to go find somebody who could teach her. And I was able to support her at home with my own sewing machine, my scrap basket. But I went out and found a quilting instructor just like I had done for myself when I was learning to quilt. Make sense? It also happened to me in graduate school. By entering graduate school, I suddenly saw myself as being nurtured and cared for by an instructor who provided a syllabus, readings, fabulous lectures, and I noticed that I was grateful to be taught. So for some of those pesky subjects that I was bored by or not skilled enough to make interesting, I went and found other homeschool moms who loved those subjects. I had a friend who loved to teach math, another one who did the biology dissections with all of our kids, another one who tutored Johanna in Latin. So by all means, when I re-entered the school space, I suddenly saw, oh, wait a minute. If I'm enjoying this, my kids might enjoy this too. And then the third possibility, and this is a realistic, true one, you may discover that your apathy for doing homeschool with your kids is a huge sign that you are done. Now, that one's a harder pill to swallow, especially if your whole identity is tied up in being a home educator. But there was a day when I was done. In my case, the energy drain and suck on me was a divorce. And I knew that I could not bring to the homeschool experience what I needed to for my high school students. So I homeschooled until they were both high school aged, my youngest two, and then they went off to school. Because while I was in the divorce moment, it was too challenging for me. So that's an honest place to be. If you don't have the appetite for homeschool anymore, it is courageous to make a new decision for your children. They deserve to be in a space where the people who are teaching them want to be there. And if you no longer want to be there, there's no shame in this. Each of these strategies is valid, and here's why. Teaching your kids lessons and subject matter when you find it tedious and have no energy for it undermines their learning experience. In other words, they're going to learn to associate the glories of the universe with drudgery or that it's punishment for you And so they're not going to catch fire in those subjects. They're going to get sort of passive aggressive with you, resisting, not cooperating, because the lights have gone out of the homeschool. So that second one is sort of the browning out, burning out boredom that we want to address. The third way that you maybe have lost energy for homeschooling could possibly be a physical and or mental health circumstance. So maybe you are suffering from something like adrenal fatigue. Maybe you were recently diagnosed with HIV or postpartum depression, or maybe you're like me and you broke your ankle, or perhaps you got the horrible diagnosis of breast cancer. When you suddenly are struggling with your body or your mental health, maybe you're going through a divorce, your energy is being siphoned off in a direction that has nothing to do with your children. Your homeschool is absolutely going to look different under these conditions. You're going to want to outsource as much as you can, and you're going to want to share with your kids that you have needs. They're not used to you having needs, but now you have them. You're going to need time to sleep. You might need time for physical or talk therapy. Maybe you need time to prepare a certain sort of banquet of right foods for yourself because you are dealing with some kind of autoimmune disease or diabetes. These take away from the energy you have to plan for math or to make literature interesting. Enlist their help. You might be surprised at how willing they are to help you, because children are naturally compassionate. And if they see you in a vulnerable place, they want to help out. They want to be a part of the loving care that you require to be your best self, just like you've been teaching them and demonstrating to them in their lives all these years. So don't try to handle these health issues off stage where they don't even know about them, or where they are experiencing you as somehow low energy, but they don't know why. I'm not asking you to burden your kids. We certainly don't want them to feel guilty or like they have to only use their indoor voices. But you can use this crock pot mode of learning for this kind of educational environment as well. Triangle in a support system. You might need a mother's helper or your own mother or neighbor, or maybe a homeschool friend who can teach your kids history with her kids for a whole semester. I know one of my friends had breast cancer, and she was teaching literature at our co-op, and I was her assistant, so that on the days when chemo made her feel especially queasy, or she would lose a train of thought, or she would accept a whole bunch of papers but had no energy to grade them, I could do all of that for her. And it was my joy and pleasure to do it, right? We want a team around us when we're going through the hard stuff. So draw support from your community. If the health issue is chronic and persistent and you can't recover your energy, it is wise and kind to both your kids and to yourself to put them in school. School is not the enemy. It's not evil. It is a place where millions of children are getting an education every single day. And when you are in that compromised state, letting your kids experience the pleasure of friends and recess and lunch and a teacher who plans lessons is a good compromise. One of my dearest friends from college went through this exact thing. I wrote about it in The Brave Learner. She moved to a new city. Her husband started a new job and she had her fifth baby, and suddenly was hit with a wave of adrenal fatigue that took her out. And so she put all of her children who were school-aged in the local elementary school, and then she took care of the newborn and the toddler at home and just paid attention to her health. She did that for a year and then brought everybody home again. Just know that these decisions are not permanent. You can always make a new one again. So if you wind up in that circumstance, just say to yourself, okay, this is what we're doing for now as a self-care measure for me and the kids, and I can re-evaluate later, 6 months from now, 3 months from now, a year from now. That's perfectly acceptable. The fourth way that you might be energy drained in your homeschool is this. You may see yourself as that garden variety person who is just bored with homeschool. It's not burnout exactly. It's just, it's not that interesting to you. You have this big, huge adult life you suddenly want to live, and this just doesn't seem fun. And yet, you've committed yourself to it for a variety of reasons. Maybe you live in a foreign country and there are not good schools. Maybe you live in a city in the United States or the UK where you don't like the public schools and you can't afford private. Maybe you are homeschooling because the community that you're a part of is so meaningful to your children. All their best friends are there. All your good friends are there. You just don't like the day-to-day tasks. You're like, but this is dull. I don't want to do it, but I have to. Okay, if that's you, I have an idea for you. Can you use the same strategies for yourself that I have urged you to use for your kids? What are those strategies? Well, remember how in The Brave Learner, I talked about enchantment, surprise, mystery, risk, adventure. How can you inject a little of that into your experience of homeschooling? In other words, not just making it better for them, how can you make it better for you? So one of the ways I think you should start is to scrap everything, scrap the plan, the curriculum. There is nothing sacred that you're keeping. It's all on the chopping block. It can all be scrapped. And what I want you to do is wake up one morning, maybe make cinnamon rolls or something yummy, pancakes, that signal to your kids, this is not a normal day, okay? And then drag the whiteboard into the room with an array of colored pens. And I want you to look at them and just go belly up and say, you know what? Are you guys bored? Because I'm a little bored. And we've got to reinvent homeschool and it's going to be awesome because you're going to help me invent it. And then I want you to write every idea they have down, no matter how silly and ridiculous. So maybe one of them says, let's do math at the beach and you live 2 hours from the beach. Or someone else says, well, I want to get up and make breakfast from scratch and put it on trays and serve it to everybody every day. Right? These are impractical, but I want you to write them all down. Maybe they'll say, well, let's start always by playing Minecraft. Or why don't we ever do science experiments? I want to blow things up. Or if we had time, Mom, I would have us go to the local private airport for guys who fly those little planes, and I would watch them take off and land every afternoon. I wish I could fly a plane. See what I'm saying? Get it all out there. I want to train pet rats. I want to go to the zoo every day. I want to learn how to drive a car. I'm 16. Like that. Because what may be missing is your willingness to include what brings joy. When we say the daily tasks are not the ones we want to do, it's because we've chosen to do tasks that we don't want to do. Yes, they need to learn how to do math. Okay, so let's say you have a child who just told you he wants to watch planes take off and land. Could you bring the math book to the little airport and sit with a window where you're watching planes take off and land? Do you hear what I'm saying? The daughter who wants to decorate trays and make wonderful food for the whole family. Couldn't we have her be in charge of the poetry tea time every week? And you don't have to do anything. That is her special task that she brings and offers you instead of you feeling like it's on your shoulders and you don't care about it. Maybe your child is saying, I want us to read the entire 7-book Harry Potter series. I'm sick of all these old history books about ancient Rome. And you realize, you know what? We've been doing classical education history for so long. It's time for us to just read a current novel series and fully enjoy it. And maybe you don't even have the voice or energy to read 7 books. So you put it to them this way. We'll read book one, and then you guys are on your own reading, but we'll watch all the movies and we'll do one every time you finish a book. In other words, brainstorm. You get to have the life you want, and it can include the tasks of homeschooling. but it does not have to be tedious and dull. And you aren't answering to anyone else, just your children. They're your accountability partners. They're your support group. They are your partners in crime. They are your chief creativity collaborators. So when you run out of energy, you get to ask them to supply it and let them run wild. They're going to come up with ideas that you didn't think of. Now, if they're really used to the tedium and the on-taskness of school, they may not know their outrageous ideas are welcome. So in that case, you have to seed their imagination. So you can say things like, all right, anything can go on this board. And the one thing I would really love to do is blow something up. So I want to put on here, how do we create, you know, a little whatever, like a vinegar baking soda volcano, right? That kind of thing. Or the one thing I know I want to do is see a red-tailed hawk in flight with my binoculars. What else is there that you guys want to do? The one thing I want to do is learn how to ice skate. Get some outrageous things on the board that are yours, and that will give them permission to contribute theirs. Here's the thing. As you give your kids a chance to dream, they are going to inject into your mind connections of stuff that you forgot. Like they may say something and it will trigger for you the perfect correspondence. You're like, oh, she wants to make a slingshot. We could talk about the history of weapons in our ancient history course because slingshots are a pretty ancient weapon. That's really interesting. I didn't realize I could draw that out. That happened to me one time. We were working on Native American history. And at the time, Liam was a lacrosse player. And we discovered that lacrosse comes from Native American games. So we went on this whole rabbit trail where we started looking at the different kinds of games that were played by various Native American nations. So that's what I'm talking about. Give your children a chance to trigger your ability to bring those connections together. The context matters, and you want to vary it from time to time. The same old every single day is going to make any of you dull. It's one reason I went to graduate school. I needed a way to stay stimulated while homeschooling, and it brought with it a rich dividend that enlivened our homeschooling experience. So maybe ask yourself that famous Mary Oliver question that you see on all the memes. What will you do with your one wild life? Like I'm sure you've all seen that. I retooled the question. And here's what I thought might be a nice way to frame it. What will you do to uplift and enrich your one boring life? It's on you. It's on you in partnership with your amazing kids. I know you can. And we can brainstorm more together. If you want help from me or the team, join the Homeschool Alliance. This is the stuff we work out every single day with our large community of hundreds of parents. And we are there for you to tailor these insights for your specific family and your specific children. Hop right into the water with us. It's very nice. It's not too hot or cold. It's just that nice Epsom salt bath that you're looking for, okay? So just to review real quick, the four ways that you might be feeling like you're done, like you don't have the energy for homeschooling, they may come from one of these four places. The babyhood stage of life, which is like a 12 to 18 month stage, just go into crockpot mode. You might be browning out, burning out, the feeling that things are no longer stimulating and you need a new source of energy. That comes from your curiosity injecting some new life into your family and home. The third possible energy drain is physical or mental, emotional health issues. And of course, now you need a team. You cannot do that alone. And it's okay if you need a break from homeschooling while you heal. And then finally, maybe you're just bored with the lifestyle. You're not really out of energy. You just don't really like it, but you don't feel like you have the option to quit it. That's when you just blow the whole thing up. You eliminate all the stuff that you thought you knew about homeschooling and you draw up a new map from scratch with your children on the whiteboard, and you give yourself permission to invent a homeschool that keeps you interested. You get to do that. This is your one precious life. If you'd like to connect with me on social media, be sure you're following me at Instagram. My handle is at Julie Brave Writer. I'm also active on Twitter. You can tweet me at Brave Writer. In the meantime, some of you have asked questions about writing, and we have this fabulous 7-day writing blitz that you can do absolutely for free simply by downloading the file at bravewriter.com. The 7 days are meant to introduce your kids to a completely different way to think about writing. So if you're looking for a way to get beyond burnout with writing, the 7-day blitz is the way to do that. So go to bravewriter.com, click on the picture of the girl with the little rocket blasters on her back and sign up, and we will send you that file, and we will look forward to seeing your shares on social media. Can't wait till next time. Until then, keep going. I'm rooting for you. I'm Julie Bogart, and this is Brave Writer.